I'll just pass it on to Miles to introduce himself.
So Darlene asked if we had started a couple minutes ago, and I said no, because I haven't even had my coffee yet. I was like, that's the only reason I came tonight. I'm going to talk to you guys today and share some information about FASD from the perspective of somebody who works at a diagnostic clinic as a consultant, as well as an individual who lives with FASD. We've been traveling around to the communities, like Darlene said, and it's been really interesting because the purpose of doing this was to start bringing awareness to FASD, because September 9th is International FASD Day. So all over the world, they have International FASD Day on the 9th month, on the 9th day every year. So to be able to come here during the month of September, when it's Awareness Month, it was a great opportunity to be able to go into communities, done public presentations, spoken in schools, spoken in many different areas, and it's been a good opportunity to help people see and understand FASD differently. There is a lot of misunderstandings when it comes to FASD, and there's a lot of misinformation. That misunderstanding and misinformation has led to years of shame and blame and stigma. The reason that we're doing the work that we do here is so that people can start talking about FASD and be comfortable and okay with it. To understand something, it really helps to be able to start the conversation. But when we don't understand something, we're afraid of it. We're afraid of something that we're not sure what's going on. I want to explain to you guys what it was like to live with FASD from my perspective, but also too, now that I can look back, seeing it from my parents' perspective, seeing it from teachers' perspective, everybody throughout my life. Now, as I went through my life, there was always these moments that would stand out. And we all have moments in our lives that we remember. And so these moments could be good moments or bad moments. And they can really affect your life and how you see things and how you handle things. My life, when I was born, I weighed 4 pounds, 15 ounces, and I was full term. So I was pretty small as a baby, and I had a lot of health issues. The first couple weeks I spent in the hospital, and then returned home with my mom, and then returned back to the hospital again. I wasn't eating, I wasn't drinking. I had what was called acute failure to thrive. So social services became involved because they were concerned about the environment that myself and my 2 older brothers were in. Now my 2 older brothers were about 5 or 6 years older than me, and when the social worker came over, they saw that the place we were living in wasn't a safe place for us. So we were apprehended, taken out of that home, and put into a foster home. We spent a couple days there, and then we returned back home with my mom. We would be with my mom, and then we'd move to another apartment. Eventually, another social worker would find us, come in the home, take us out again, and put us in another foster home. The first 2.5 years of my life, I was in about 6 or 7 different foster homes. I went from foster home to being in the hospital, to my mom, to foster home. When you're going from home to home, it's really hard to understand who family is. It's hard to understand what it means to be in a family. And at a young age, I started to wonder why nobody wanted me. Because as I was going through all these foster homes, the only thing that seemed to be consistent in all of them was me. So why didn't this family want me? Why did they send me away? Why didn't this family want me? So I got attachment disorder, because how do I connect with a family or anybody and believe that they'll stay around if every time somebody's around, they leave? So it was a pretty rough start to life. And at the age of just about before I was 3, a social worker came over to the home and found myself and my 2 brothers in the house alone. Like I said, they were only a few years older than me, so they weren't old enough to take care of themselves, let alone a child. And social worker again took us out of the home. This time they split us up, and my brothers went to go live on a farm outside of the city of Calgary, and I went to another foster home. I went into this home, and I remember walking up there and having like this little green teddy bear that I had. And so I went up with the social worker, met this new family, started to spend a couple days there, eventually turned into a couple months. Next thing I knew, it had been over a year, and I'd been with this family. I hadn't been in one place for over a couple months in my entire life. So this was different. This was a change. In my life, when all of these changes or something different would happen, I was kind of grabbed onto that thinking, this is where things are going to get better. So as I spent more time in this home, I started to learn what it was like to be in a family. I started to learn what it was like to kind of have brothers and sisters and parents and have food and clothes and shelter and structure and routine, all of these things. One day, Brian and Christine, the foster parents of the home, sat me down and they said, what do you think about being part of our family? And I was like, I thought I am. But they said, you are, but we want to make it legal and we want to adopt you. And so I thought about it and I thought, well, that would mean I'd have a mom and a dad that are around and brothers and sisters. And because at that point I hadn't seen my family, my biological parents or my brothers for a couple years. And so I thought, okay, this sounds good. So we went through with the adoption. They weren't able to find out where my dad was, and they weren't able to connect well with my mom. So the judge granted the adoption to Brian and Christine. So they became my new mom and dad. So it was my new family with my brothers and sisters. Now, when I got into this home, their oldest son, his name was Carrie. And one of the health issues that I have is problems with hearing. So my name when I was born was Carrie. And so sometimes it was hard to differentiate when they were saying Carrie or Terry, except when they were calling me because I was in trouble. Then I was like, oh, I heard that was Carrie. So, but they said, what do you think about a new name to go with your new family? And they said, you can pick your name. Now, I was like 5 or 6 years old, and this was the 80s, and most of my days were spent watching cartoons. There's some wicked cartoons on in the 80s. So I'm thinking, oh, maybe I can pick a name from like Transformers or G.I. Joe. But I was like, what's a really cool name? So I went up to my mom and dad, and I'm like, okay, I've got my name. I said, all right, what do you want it to be? And I said, I want to be called He-Man. And they said, no, we are not calling you He-Man. Think about it a little bit more. And I was like, okay. So I thought about it some more. I went back to them and I said, okay, how about Smiles? And they said, okay, sounds good, but how about we change it a little bit and we call you Miles? And I said, okay. And I appreciate that because most of my teen years were spent in the mall trying to pick up girls. So could you imagine going up to a girl and be like, hi, I'm Smiles. Kind of weird. So here I was, this new family, this new start, thinking, okay, this is where things are going to get good. I ended up going into kindergarten, then I went into grade one. Now, when I went into this home with Brian and Christine, they went to their family doctor and said, you know, we're adopting this young boy. We know that he has what at the time was known as FAS, fetal alcohol syndrome, and there was FAE, fetal alcohol effects. It's now called FASD because all of that goes into FASD. So they said, we've got this little boy we're adopting. We know that he has FASD. What does that mean? Their family doctor said, well, he's going to struggle with reading and writing, and he'll have a small head. And my dad said, okay, we'll buy him a small hat. What else? And they're like, oh, that's about it. So that was all the information my parents had to go on how to support me. Because of that lack of information, the next few years, everything that showed itself as FASD was now going to be mistaken as bad behavior. We would see the behavior, jump to its bad behavior, and then jump straight to punishment. So I went into grade one, and already in grade one, the teachers could tell that I was behind where the other kids were. So my reading and writing wasn't where the other kids were, my speech was behind. So at the end of the year, the school counselor who I met with quite often to do work, she called me into her office. I sat down with her and my parents, and I don't remember how the conversation went, but it was something to the point of, we're gonna have you repeat grade one so that you can catch up to where the other kids are. And the thing I remember about that meeting was leaving that office and going back to my classroom and thinking to myself, man, the teacher likes me so much, she wants me for another year. So I was like, okay, I'll stay for her. So for her, I repeated grade one. My second year in grade one, it was lunchtime or recess, and I was walking through the field, and there's these two kids that were fighting. And the one kid on the bottom, he yelled out my name, and I looked over, and the kid on top, his name was Ed Wheeler, and he was the school bully. So the kid on the bottom said, Miles, help me. I don't know who the kid on the bottom was, but we were about as far as you and I away, and I pick up a rock and I throw it at the kid to get Ed off of him, and I miss. So I step closer, pick up a bigger rock, throw it, miss. Step about this close, pick a rock that takes two hands, and I go over top of Ed's head, and I throw the rock on him. End up hitting him in the eye and cutting his eye open. Now, the boy in the bottom gets up, runs away. Ed gets up crying and bleeding and runs away. Gym teacher comes over and says, what happened? And everyone's like, Miles threw a rock at him. And gym teacher goes, Miles, did you do that? And I go, yeah. And he goes, go to the office. I'm like, okay. So I go to the office. Now, the reason I didn't run away or I didn't say I didn't do that was because what did I do wrong? I was helping out the kid on the bottom. The way that my brain developed and the way that I was able to process and understand things, cause and effect, the consequences for my actions did not connect. And if they did, it took a while to understand it. So I didn't understand that I shouldn't have done that because I could have hurt somebody. all I understood was react to the situation to help this kid. I end up being sent to the office. About 20 minutes later, I sit with the principal, I get in trouble, and I get sent home. So that was the very first time that the way my behavior was, because of the way my brain was developed, that it was seen as bad behavior, and I got punishment. As I would go through school, this would continue to happen in many different areas. I was in school, and I was in what was known as an LD class, learning disabilities class. And this was good because it was a smaller classroom, and there was about 8 or 10 kids and 2 teachers. Now, when we did the work in this class, I got time to do the work over and over again. So when I'd work on something, I could try and do it 4 or 5 times. And by being able to do that, I could start to understand how to do the work. Again, the way my brain worked was, it wasn't that it didn't work and I couldn't do the schoolwork. It was that sometimes it took me longer to process the information from one part of my brain to the other. Sometimes it took me longer to remember what it was that I learned and to be able to say. So to give you an example of this, I am going to call Darlene. All right, so Darlene and I are gonna meet for the first time. I don't know her, she doesn't know me. Hi, what's your name?
Darlene, what's your name? What do they call you? What do you go by?
Okay, we live in a very fast world. We live in a very fast society. School is one of those places that is, we have to get the information, we have to learn it, we have to remember it, we have to do it, and we have to go at this certain pace. When you are somebody that maybe it takes longer for you to process information, to be able to understand it, then be able to deliver it, how does that look? Well, when Darlene asked me the question, Darlene, how many questions did you ask me?
One
question. But you did it in what?
Three ways.
When Darlene asked me, what's your name? Well, I'm thinking, my name is Miles Himmelreich, and well, it's Miles Terrence Stefan Himmelreich, but she probably doesn't want my whole name. Then she rephrases it, which people often do, trying to help and cue the person. So what was the second one? What do you go by? Well, I go by Mr. Himmelreich, or I go by Miles. And then the third question was,
What do people call you?
Some people call me Smiles, some people call me Skip, some people call me names that I can't even say. So I'm thinking of all this. To Darlene, she asked one question in 3 different ways. But for me, she asked 3 different questions. Every time she asked a new question, I had to start processing over again. Because my processing pace was slower, she's standing there holding my hand going, okay, this is weird and uncomfortable, stop holding my hand. But she didn't understand what was going on, right? That it was taking longer for me to process. So if I couldn't do the work and somebody would be like, Miles, what's the answer? And I'm like, were you paying attention? Were you listening? Yeah, I don't know. Well, obviously you weren't paying attention listening, because if you were, you would know what the answer is. So as I was going through these different classes, I started to constantly seem to be in trouble for not paying attention, not listening, not sitting still, all of these things. I was the kid that I really enjoyed school when I was in elementary class. And so I was the kid that would come in the classroom and I would be like, all right, teacher would go, okay, everyone take your seats. And I'd be like, you know this seat? It has 4 legs? I only have 2 legs. But I bet if we had a race, I could totally outrun this seat. Are you ready, seat? Here we go. My teacher, Miles, sit down. I'd be like, okay, all right, I will sit in my chair. This is a weird chair. There's a pillow on it. I should sleep in this chair. Miles, focus. Come on, listen to what I'm saying. I'm like, okay, all right, I'm listening. And then the teacher would go, who wants to take the attendance to the office? I'm like, I do. She goes, yes, leave. I mean, yes, take the attendance. So I take the attendance, and I'm walking down the hall, and I pop in the classroom next to us. I'm like, hello, do you want me to take your attendance? No, Miles, you got it. So I'm like, okay. So I go to the office and see the secretaries, and I'm like, hello, ladies. I'm like, hello, Miles. Put the attendance down. And as I was leaving, the principal would come out of the office, and he goes, hello, Miles. And I go, I'll see you soon. So then I head back to class. Now I sit down in the chair and the teacher starts going over the lesson with me on how to do this, how to do that. Again, I'm struggling on trying to figure out how to do it, but she's giving me the time to figure this out. 2 of the biggest keys in my life to be successful were routine and repetition. If I could do something over and over again, I could start to understand it and I could remember, oh yeah, that was what that was, and I could process it and get the information faster. When I was in probably grade 5 was where, for myself, I started to realize that I don't act like the other kids. I'm kind of silly and weird and crazy and wild, and I didn't understand why. Kids would make fun of us because we're in the LD class, learning disabilities, and they call us the LD kids, little dummies. And so I was constantly getting in trouble for not paying attention, not listening, and now I was getting in trouble for getting in fights. When you're constantly told that you're not doing things right and you're not trying hard enough, eventually it turns into blah, 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 because you've heard it so much. I end up getting sent home one day for fighting, not listening, whatever it was. I come in the house and I'm waiting for my mom to go, blah, blah, blah. So I get in the house and she goes, take your stuff off and go down to your room and play for a bit. And I'm like, okay. So I go to my room. She calls me upstairs and I'm like, okay, here we go. And here comes the blah, blah, blah. She goes, let's get in the car. We're going to go to the mall. And I'm like, all right, sure. So we're driving, and I'm still waiting. I'm like, why is she not saying anything yet? We pull into the parking lot at the mall, and I go, oh, great. She's going to wait till we're in front of everybody in the mall and then tell me off. So we get in the mall, and we're walking. Now, this is the 80s, so I see some blue jeans, the ones where you shut off the lights, you'd still see them. I was like, these are the coolest jeans ever. And my mom's like, do you like them? I was like, yeah. She's like, okay, let's get them. And I'm like, okay. So we get the jeans, go home, have dinner, play some Nintendo, go to bed, day's over. The reason I remember that day is because it was a moment. It was a moment in my life that I remember what the blue jeans looked like. I remember that we went to the Hudson Bay at Deerfoot Mall. I remember it was fall time. I remember what it looked like outside, what it smelled like, what it felt like. I remember all of those things because that memory stuck with me. Because for one day, did I do something wrong? Probably yes. But did I get in trouble? No. When you're constantly in trouble, it's just nice to have those days where, yeah, you messed up, whatever. We're just gonna let it go. Because I felt every day I was in trouble. Now, my parents were amazing people. They have fostered over 70 kids. They have adopted 10 kids and have 2 biological children. All the individuals that they adopted have varying disabilities. There's 4 of us with FASD. There's autism, Down syndrome, many different things. And our house was full of people coming and going all the time. And one of the greatest things I ever learned from my parents was in our home, it was never about your disability, it was about your ability. They focused on the things you could do, not the things you couldn't. One of my younger sisters, she had myotonic dystrophy. And when she came to us, she was on a board and was tube fed. She had a life expectancy of 8 years. She wasn't going to be able to walk or talk or feed herself. My parents started working with her, started exercising with her, started helping her. Eventually got to the point where she was able to come off the board. She was able to feed herself. She was able to now be in braces and she could walk around. Then got to a point where she'd sometimes be in a wheelchair, but sometimes she could walk without the braces. It got to the point where she was able to completely feed herself and talk. It even got to a point where she would be talking so much, my mom would be like, Nikki, shut up. And I'd look at my mom and be like, you're the one that taught her how to talk, so. When Nikki was 29 years old, my dad went down to her bedroom and found that she was laying in bed, and he had to end up rushing her to the hospital. Her one lung had collapsed. She spent about 11 days in the hospital. After those 11 days, her other lung ended up collapsing. At the age of 29, Nikki passed away. Moments in your life, how you take them can really affect you. This moment in my life when my sister passed away was very hard because I loved her very much. She was my little sister and that was very hard to lose her. But the way that we took that as our family was, that was 21 more years than we were ever supposed to get with her. She did more in those years than she was ever meant to do. She was supposed to just be on this board and never do anything. Here she got up and did dishes and went to her day program and played with her sister and helped make dinner and did all of these things. She did what she could. She did what her abilities were, not what her disability was. That was one of the greatest things my parents taught me. It was focusing on your ability, not your disability. When you're in this home that's full of kids, all this stuff's going on. There's a lot of health issues. It's very easy to feel like you are lost in the shuffle. As somebody who had attachment disorder, it was very important for me to feel that people did see me and want me around. One of the greatest things that my parents did that, again, is a memory that sticks with me, was you didn't know when it was going to happen or who it was going to happen to. But one Saturday morning, you'd be woken up and they put a Burger King crown on your head and say, you're king or queen for the day. So this meant that you got to have whatever you want for breakfast. You got to go to the toy store and pick up one toy. Your brothers and sisters had to be nice to you for the day. You got to watch whatever cartoons you wanted. The day was about you. To have a day that was about me in a positive way was so awesome, because I had plenty of days that were about me in negative ways. I got attention plenty of the time for negative things, but very rarely for positive things. This moment sticks out in my head because it's a positive moment where I felt I was seen, heard, and I was loved. Now, when I was going through school, as I went through the different classes, it was very hard for me to focus and concentrate and get the information to understand what was going on. I want to give you guys an example of what that was like. We're going to use this. This is going to represent my mouth, and this will represent my brain. When I would go into the class and I would learn, say we're going to start off with math class. So I'd learn the steps to cross, multiply, and divide. I'd get that information in my brain, move on to the next class, which is cooking class, learning how to make pastries, muffins, and buns. And then I move into language arts, where I learned how to spell, write paragraphs, do that kind of stuff, get all that information. Then I go into gym class. I love gym class, playing sports. Then I go back later that day to math class, and the teacher says, Miles, how do you cross, multiply, and divide? We went over this information this morning. I saw you do it. What are the steps? And what would come out of my mouth? Was the information in my brain? Yeah, it was up there. But was it in categories? Was it in files? Was it easily retrievable? No. It was all mixed together. All that information of everything I learned that day was all mixed together. So it wasn't easy to retrieve the information and go, oh, well, to do this, you have to cross multiply divide, step one, step two, step three. I couldn't remember that. Now, when I do routine and repetition, the things that I have in my brain start to almost organize themselves to the point where if I've done it enough, I'll be able to remember it, and I'll be able to retrieve it, and then I'll be able to interpret it, right? So I wasn't given the time to always do that, and so I wasn't able to process the information and deliver it. When I would be in the classroom doing this stuff, I would then go into junior high. And I thought, okay, here's the change where things are going to get easier in middle school. Well, things didn't get easier. There's a bigger school, bigger homework assignments, became bigger problems. As I was doing information, now not only was I in a bigger school, but I was integrated into regular classes. So now instead of being in a class of 8 kids with 2 teachers, I was in the class of 25 kids with 1 teacher. I now didn't have the time to have that routine and repetition put in place. If I had a question, I couldn't say, sorry, can you repeat that 5 or 6 times just for me? So as I would do this, I would sit in the class and try to be like, okay, I've just got to figure this out. When the teacher asked, what's going on? What's the answer to the question? And I go, I don't know. The teacher would look at me and assume that I wasn't paying attention. I've had the opportunity now to look back in my life and see from different perspectives. So I want to give you a perspective of what was going on for me, as well as understanding from the teacher's perspective. So anybody sitting on a couch wearing a white shirt? Oh my goodness.
Purple.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't know my colors. Sure. I'm the guy with a disability. Hi, what's your name?
Terry.
Terry. Hi, Terry. Well, that was my name when I was born. Good name. All right, Terry, what I want you to do is step one to what you need to do. When I say go, step one is I want you to write your first name and keep writing until I say stop. Step one for all of you is I want you as loud as you can and as fast as you can, I want you to say the alphabet backwards. All right? So step one, write your first name and keep going until I say stop. Oh, did you think you were going to use this? See, that would be too easy. If she got to use that, you wouldn't get to really understand what it was like for me. When I would write, it was always hard. It felt like my hands didn't work like everybody else's. I was always told, you don't take your time, your writing's messy. So to give you an example of that, I'm going to give you this. These dots here. Now there's only four finger holes. And then I'm gonna give you this to write with. Alright? Now, as I was told to do my work, Miles, focus on your work. I would look at it, but I just couldn't see things like everybody else. Now you have beautiful glasses. But I'm gonna trade you for these cool glasses.
Oh no.
Alright. Okay, step one when I say go, write your first name and keep going until I say stop.
Okay.
Step one for you guys, alphabet, backwards, as loud, as fast as you can, and go. Okay, stop. Now we're gonna do step two. Step two is, oh, you're not done. Step two is I want you to write your first and last name and keep writing it until I say stop. With glasses, you gotta put everything back on. Good try. Step two for you guys is I want you to continue doing the alphabet backwards as loud and as fast as you can, but this time I want you to go like this, okay, with your hands while you're doing it. All right, and go. Okay, stop. All right. Terry, how did that feel doing all that? I think it's important that you look out so the audience can really see what's
going on.
Well, I actually can't see anyone's face right now. It was kind of hard.
Why was it hard?
Well, the gloves. And my hands are shaking because I'm nervous. And I also can't see.
How was it writing?
It was hard.
It was hard? Yeah.
Yeah. I can hardly pick out my own name.
All right. What was step one that I gave you?
Write my name as many times as I can.
Write your
first name.
What was step one I gave you guys?
Alphabet
backwards. Step two that I gave you?
Write my first and last name until you say stop.
What was step two I gave you guys? Alphabet and a half like that. What was step three that I gave you, Terry?
No, step three.
Yeah.
What was there?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
What was step three that I gave her?
Talk to us about it.
Stop.
Were you not paying attention? Were you not listening? Do you not care about what I'm trying to teach you, Terry? So, I said flip the paper over and write the answer to 1 plus 1.
2.
Very good. As I stood over here, I said, okay, now flip the paper over and write the answer to 1 plus 1. Why did you not hear that and why did you not do that?
I was concentrating on writing my name.
So there's too much going on here. There's the noise and all the distractions of everybody else doing things, right?
I didn't hear you at all.
You didn't hear it all. Okay, so thank you. What happens when you take the gloves away? What happens when you take the rubber pencil away? What happens when you take the glasses away? All those noises and all those distractions, you should be able to do the third step. And that's what everyone thought about me. As Miles, you should be able to do the third step. But what people didn't realize was, as I sat in that chair, to the right of me was a boy tapping his pencil, and that was grabbing my attention, going, hello! To the left of me was a girl with way too much perfume on. Those smells were grabbing my attention, going, hello! The lights above me were flickering, grabbing my attention, going, hello! Tags on my clothes, the way my socks felt, the way that seat felt, all of that was grabbing my attention, going, hello! As well, I have what I call bubble trouble. So if you guys imagine thousands of bubbles inside your body, constantly making you move all the time. So here I was, moving all the time because of the bubbles, having sensory overload, so I couldn't focus on what was going on, because all of this stuff was grabbing my attention. But when the teacher looked at me and said, Miles, what's the answer to the question? And I was like this, I don't know. What did the teacher think? Not listening, not paying attention. I didn't understand what was going on. And even if I did, what kid that's 12 or 14 years old is gonna stand up and go, actually, sorry teacher, I don't really understand what's going on because I have what's called fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, which means that it's hard for me to concentrate and focus and then process the information and understand and be able to report it and then deliver it. And I also have all these sensory issues and the lights are bugging me and the noises are bugging me and the smells are bugging me. I also have bubble trouble too, and so I can't control what I'm doing, I can't focus. So actually that's why I can't answer the question. Even if I knew that, what kid is gonna stand up and hear?